But I'd like to talk about something called war, for the simple reason that I have a notion that war is totally unnecessary, and that it is in fact a form of crime. And a war had me puzzled for a while, because I realized that there's such a stupidity and such a destruction of materials and people that I wondered, well, what's the benefit of war except from for the few who make money out of it? And of course, the origin also of war. Why do people think that they should destroy something or somebody to basically be respected or acknowledged for their opinion? More importantly, why is it that people do not realize that opposite opinions basically show that both opinions are wrong and that there must be a new opinion which can be created out of the conditions that both of the opponents are living within? And so for me, war is simply a crime, and as I described in my essay on curing criminality, a crime can be cured because it is simply a process that is not working in the larger context. As war is a crime, war can be cured. As you know, with doctors looking at patients, you need to look beyond the symptoms. So you need to realize that war is a symptom. Why is it that governments or groups of people actually send groups of their own people to die? Of course, they sell it differently. They say that they train those people for killing, which is the same as turning them into murderers. And why is it that in the Western world, where the Christian Church says to operate, and one of the First Amendment is "Thou shalt not kill," they happily train people to kill and happily send people out to kill? There must be something else going on than what they preach. So what is the purpose of having people go out to kill other people? And they do that on both sides, and on both sides most often the people that go out killing are the people that don't have much money, that don't have very many possibilities to develop in that culture. So very often, and you can see that in America, they're at the areas of poverty or depression. And in times of depression, very often governments claim that war is the way out of depression or poverty. And in any case, there are a lot of people who seek a way to survive and live because there's a lack of money or a lack of other things. And in a way, you could say that the lack of money and the existence of poverty is the creation of the government. Jacques Foucault was very clear on the government using the middle class to suppress the lower class, so that there is an example of a kind of abhorrent lifestyle which people would not want, but that is actually the upper class, the so-called upper class, that benefits from this. And when you look into the nature of war, you can see that it's always the upper class that benefits of it. They destroy things and then buy it up cheaply, or they destroy things and just grab it cheaply. And it's always other people who do the work for them. So Smedley Butler was one of the generals who realized that war is a racket. He wrote a book with that title. And then what is the difference between the mafia or mob as a racket, or the government as a racket? What is it that a group of people will happily license and train people to kill, to murder, and then send them out to murder others, while in fact those others are people exactly the same as them? Have they to try to live? So what is the use of carrying a gun, going out to shoot somebody else who's there facing you on some other side of some imaginary line, who's shooting at you for the same reason that they've been given a bit of money to kill whoever's getting in front of their sights of their gun. It is that idea that you go out and kill somebody and that you would change things which is not correct. As it is said, ideas or ideals are bulletproof. So whoever has an idea, you will perhaps stop the individual, but you will not stop the idea, because ideas are like a virus. They are contagious, and they're like virus, they can be contagious health or contagious ill. And if an idea or an idea is healthy or not, can only be seen in retrospect. There was a time when the Jews who went to America and institutionalized Marxism there were very convinced that Marxism was an ideal way to go. And say 60 million or 600 million, and nobody knows precisely how many people were killed in the Gulag and by the Holodomor and by the wars in Russia. But let's say that it would be around 600 million. They died for an ideal which people now no longer want to live in that form. So if the one idea just simply doesn't last and the other ideal simply doesn't last anymore, then what is the use of having wars in the pursuit of ideals? Saying that, as the American state now says, that they are out to democratize other nations. Well, the United States of America is a republic. And democracy is only a third level of a government institution, the first being the dictatorship, the second being the oligarchy, the third being the democracy or the democracy, and the third being the autarky. As I mentioned elsewhere, the dictatorship is basically that there's one father figure who treats the rest of the country like babies, and always the leadership has a clique around them which will suppress the others for whatever arguments, and most often status, money, women, mansions, larger cars, whatever. There's some privileges they get and the others do not. So in the dictatorship, around the dictator, there's a clique which will suppress the rest, as Foucault described. In the oligarchy, it's no different, except that you don't have a dictator who, like the father figure, treats the rest as babies. You have a group of parents who treat the rest like children. And the children are allowed to be productive and do their things, but still they're being milked, so all the cream goes elsewhere. And in the oligarchy, likewise, there is a structure, a clique around them to uphold that specific form of organization. And the democracy, it's the same, except that now you have, say, not a father figure or a parent group, but you have a family which, like adolescents, treats the others like adolescents. So they're just bickering and they're trying to form cliques. And very often you see that at the moment that a political structure has been created in a democracy, that you do not get that all of the people who are elected into the government have their say and can contribute their ideals, and that they together can come up with new ideals which might be leading to workable ideals. But in most nations you find that those cliques group themselves in a majority and a minority, and in England they are actually called the opposition, so that you still have the same structure of hierarchy which you already had with the autarky or with the dictatorship. So in that sense, a democracy is still a dictatorship of a majority, and as you can find in countries such as the United States of America, the majority is perhaps only 1% or a fraction of 1%. So essentially you could say that it is still a majority of one, except that in a dictatorship you would have to remove that one, and in a democracy that one would just have to switch party and then the other equivalent party comes in place. So America, not being a democracy itself, but said to be a republic, tries to turn other countries into democracies, which is basically a mob rule of a majority of one, by one. So if those kind of governments have these kind of systems in place, as a result of which people are still not able to combine their ideals and come into a new understanding with each other, as you would have in the model of the government by King Arthur, that all of the knights at the round table would voice their opinions, and as David Bohm presented in the dialogue group, once people are able to express their ideas and share it with each other, then everybody know what the others are doing. And specifically, you will need to act on your own ideas and own ideals so that you can actually stand for what you say. And then the rest is negotiation, that what when you do what you want to do, that you do not interfere with the life of others, with life on Earth, and with the planet. So in that sense, autarky is the only decent form of government, because there everybody can represent themselves, and everybody will need to respect others, and the complementarity of views will always lead to new and better insights, for the simple reason that if two people have opposing views, that probably means that in their standpoint they're standing back to back, because people can only see the opposite of each other if they're looking in opposite directions. And either they are standing in front of you, that means that they are seeing you and you are seeing them, which is often the case in describing perspective. You always describe yourself in describing your perspective. But then still, the complementarity of perspective simply shows that you are seeing another part of yourself, or more generally, another part of your reality that you're not considering, and the other is. We cannot see our own blind spots, but the others can. So together, we can see more than alone. And that is essentially the solution for conflict, as David Bohm already presented in the dialogue group. Everybody can present their views, but they are not there to convince other of their views. They are not there to react to the views of others. They're not there to have an opinion on the views of others. The others have presented their views. Now you know. So how can you learn from that? I once did a mini conference and I asked people, all of them were describing consciousness using different forms of mathematics. So I asked them to interview each other for those parts of the understanding of the theory of the other, which in their own theory they hadn't worked out yet, so that they could interview the new, the different ideas of the others, so that they could fill in the blank spots in their own maps of understanding. And if people learn to do that, and they can learn to do that in kindergarten, primary school, and throughout their life, then you can easily realize that when other people have a different point of view, they will have a different perspective and they will have a different view on reality. So when people disagree in what they see, the first thing is, what is your standpoint and what is your outlook? Once you understand that the standpoint which they have is different, then the second question, of course, what is their outlook? They might be looking at something totally different than what you're looking at. And if people would do that in board meetings in corporations and companies, if people would do that in governments and in families, then they would see how their complementarity can help them complete their perspective. And for me, that is also the essence of the cure for war. First of all, war is unnecessary because why would you clobber somebody for having a different idea? Why don't you just respect that from their standpoint and with their outlook, they would look at things differently? That's why they do it. Why do you think that people should have your ideas? Because by your blind spots, you certainly will not have a complete understanding of reality anyhow. We will need the complementarity of others to be able to overcome our blind spots and as a result be able to get a more complete, more integrated, more encompassing view on reality as a whole. That's the whole purpose of having a social organization in which people can vote and join a party or create a party and then in government present their views as a party and as an individual so that as a government they can present the kind of problems that are being addressed and the kind of solutions which they are groping for, and government then could ideally say, well, this week we are addressing the problem of poverty, for example. And then everybody in the nation knows that we are now addressing the topic of poverty, and that everybody in the nation can click on the link and send in their solutions on poverty. And as a result of that, the problem of poverty has been replaced by solutions for poverty. And the week after, a government can go to the next perspective to be resolved. The problem that most nations have is the disease of representation. Instead of self-representation, there are others speaking on your behalf. They don't know what you think. You most of the time don't know what you think. So how can others? And how can those people who are there as a representative talk about what they think if, like you, for a larger part, they don't know what they think? We're still trying to find out how things work, and as a result, trying to complete our understanding, which we can do much better if we compare notes with others. So, by that understanding, if government would simply be the place where ideas come together and people prioritize the kind of ideas which need to be resolved, and everybody in the nation gets involved in the resolving of those ideas, then evidently the most powerful ideas which come up are the so-called opposite ideas. How can it be that somebody has the totally opposite perspective on an idea than somebody else? If those two opposite ideas or ideals can exist, but evidently in a group of people also can coexist, then why would that be a conflict instead of a solution? Where is that point of view that both people can see that their standpoint is not the same and their outlook is not the same, and thus what they see is not the same? They think they talk about the same, and they think they're in opposition on what they think they see. But in fact, if you look at the biology of things, what we see is a field of vibrations. It goes into our sensory system, then from the sensory cell to the neuron to the plexus, it goes into the brain. There's sort of four dimensions of translation in between, and the sensory input which we work with, Indians call it samsara, produces a mental interpretation or a world image, which the Indians call maya, which is not true. That's why the Indians use the word maya to in fact also say it's an illusion, it's an imagination, it's an interpretation. It is not the reality, it's an interpretation of our experiences. So how can we have conflicts about our perceived reality if we know that that reality is simply only an interpretation? If we have a conflict of views, then we need to understand how our interpretations are incomplete and how we can help each other to make that complete. And so instead of going out and clobbering whoever has an opposite opinion or an opposite view, then we can compare notes and get a larger understanding. That is also the essence of the principle of life, which has is as its essence freedom of choice. When you look in the body, you can see that freedom of choice is an internal affair. It is something that happens within your own body. It is unique for you. And freedom of choice is something that you experience within yourself. As the biblical phraseology has it, the kingdom is within. The kingdom of freedom, the kingdom of freedom of choice is within you. In the pineal gland you have freedom of choice. The hypophysis turns that into a decision which determines how you relate to your environment differently. Do you open up to the environment? Do you close off to the environment? Do you adapt and adopt? Or do you fight and flight? The four parameters at that level are fight and flight and fear and faint. Fight and flight are adaptations of the outer world. Fear and faint are adaptations in the inner world. So once you go one level further, once you've created that decision within you, then within you, you created a new landscape. By your decision, you reparametrized how you relate to your environment. You determined your own self-definition. If you're open or closed for your environment, you literally defined yourself. So you're open in paradise or closed in hell. And that determines your internal climate, the beliefs that you conditioned, and the beliefs by which your body then operates. So you determine if the climate is hotter or colder, warmer or wetter. And those four elements of the climate, the humors, as the Greeks call them, determine your physiology, if you accelerate or decelerate, if you are extrovert or introvert. And that internal climate, which is then your convictions, the belief that you operate by, leads to the activation of your cells, more or less, faster or slower. And that is then what you put out towards the outer world. That is then the expression of your freedom of choice by the activation of your body. And then you will discover how compatible that is with what's going on in the universe, with what's going on Earth, what's going on in other life forms, what's going on in other people. And so there are four steps of translation of freedom of choice towards your action in the environment, and then by your action you go into interaction, which will cause a reaction. From that you learn, from that you will find out if your Maya image of the world was mistaken, and if your sensory input, your samsara, is actually complete or incomplete. Can you trust the samsara sensory input? Can you work with that interpretation, Maya, as you created it or not? So we are all here to learn that. And learning that, of course, means that you have freedom of choice. That's the first level. Then you have your decision, which leads to your conviction, which leads to the action toward the outside world. But the freedom of choice also means that everybody else also has freedom of choice. Every living being has freedom of choice, which means that you need to respect that others have that freedom of choice as well. And that the freedom of choice is something that you live within you, but you cannot impose on others, because they too have freedom of choice. And if you cannot impose it on others, a war immediately disappears. Because, of course, they are free to have their opinions and to live that. But the third step of that staging is, first you have freedom of choice, and then you need to have respect of others. But the third is that you need to be response-able. That what you do in the acting on your belief in the world around you by your reflexes will lead to an interaction. And in the interaction, you need to be sensitive to see if what you intend can actually fit into the environment, if there's receptivity for it, if there's space for it. If there's no space for it, whatever you put out will accumulate. It will be an impulse of energy into your environment, but there is no space for that in the environment, as a result of which bounces back to you. That bouncing back to you, you feel as a blockage or as an accumulation of heat, which you interpret as anger, which you might interpret as a reason to hammer it out much more. But you could also interpret that anger as a sign that you're trying to move a mountain. Perhaps you need to reposition yourself and exert your energy there where there's receptivity for it. And a responsibility, the ability to respond, is also the capacity to be sensitive to what you're doing and to sense if what you're doing finds receptivity, which essentially is an element of respect. If, on the contrary, you find that you put out your energy and your intent into the environment and there's no response whatsoever, then you can feel that the energy you put out, nothing of it comes back, which you will interpret as the loss or a leakage of energy, which you will experience as the drain of energy, which you will sense as the energy falling into a void. But the way we feel it is actually called fear. So when you lose your energy, you know that something is terribly wrong. You call it fear. But in actual effect, you're putting your energy into a space where there's nothing that can connect to it. You're in the wrong space. You need to reposition yourself. You need to trust the feeling of fear to know that that is not a place to act on that thought that you have, and that that thought is not suitable for the environment you're in. So the essence of the elimination of war is the same essence as that of healing disease or healing crime, is that you're able to edit your thoughts, that you edit your ideals and your ideas, which means that when you're running into anger or fear, that you realize that you're in the wrong environment, that your action, your reflex is not proper, which means that your belief on which that reflex acts is not proper, which means that the decision which you took on which you operated that belief is improper. But actually, that decision you took is not suitable for the environment that you're in. And most often that means that you took a decision at some other time in a different context, and this is not that context. That decision does not apply. So in a way, you did not limit your decision, you did not program your mental computer wisely enough to realize that your decision is limited only for that environment in which you created it. And once you start to learn to do that, you also know that the choices that you make are valid for you only. And that means that you cannot take decisions for others. You cannot take decisions which are valid in other environments. You need to reevaluate your decisions by reevaluating your options every time anew, which is called beginner's mind or Zen mind or Satori or the openness of the baby or God awareness, that you are fully aware of what's going on, and that in that setting you're totally new. Yes, you might have had experience in other settings, but these are not that setting. That is not those other settings. So you need to go to a different mental process where reflex conditioning, which is basically what's done in creating slavery, does not apply. And you need to come back to full consciousness. You need to actually live in full consciousness. So once you understand that, you can realize that with the freedom of choice and the respect and the responsibility, you then are able to retune your interaction with your environment, and out of that comes reliability. That when you interact with others, and when you say what your view is, that you know that your view will work on that environment, and that others can trust you because you're not just reliable for yourself, but you're thereby also reliable for others. And that then creates the cohesion for a stable social structure, that people do what they say, because when they say it, they know that it'll work. They don't work with knowledge, but they work with wisdom. And the difference between knowledge and wisdom is experienced, experiential knowledge. You know when that knowledge works, and you know when that knowledge does not work. So in the transition from your freedom of choice to your action in your environment, you will be aware that others are doing exactly the same. They are learning, like yourself, how to be creators in creation, and they, like yourself, are the divine godlike beings. They operate the God principle. The God principle is you integrate the capacity to generate, operate, or destroy the definitions by which you work. You're able to reset the boundaries. Our organs do that. That's why they're called the gods of the Olympus. And every cell does it, which is where every cell is the universe in inverse. So you as a whole are able to do that, and you are learning how to do that in the environment of Earth. You actually learn to do that by growing into it, literally. As a baby, then a child, then an adolescent, then an adult, you learn how to bridge the gap from individuality to humanity. You are born as a human, and then as a baby you just are unable to do anything. You're totally dependent. You need to be cared for by others, and by their cares you in a way implicitly learn how to know your body. So then you learn how to use your body, you learn how to work your body, learn how to work with your body. If all goes well, you learn not to overwork your body so that you never get sick. And then from understanding your body, you can get to understand how you can interplay with that body. And that interplay process is called mind. So as a child, you learn how to operate mind. You appreciate that other people have other minds, that people use their minds differently, that your mind is very specifically for your interaction with your body and the environments that you know. When you interact via the minds of others, you hear their life story, and you know that they've gotten through a different pathway. They have a different body. They grew up in a different environment. They're conditioned and cultured differently. So through your mind, you can learn that there are more cultures, that there are more solutions for living on Earth. And through your mind, you can understand that the knowledge of our body pertains to our environment, and that people who have lived in a different environment have different body knowledge. And actually, at the third level of adolescence, that is where the women, who are the carriers of life on Earth, then know that they look for people with a mind which knows about other experiences, and a body who has lived through those other experiences, so that with their mind and their body, they can connect up with the mind and the body of the other, because the others have lived through different circumstances and their mind is able to deal with different circumstances. So they complete each other in that sense. And in puberty and in sex, there is that completion that comes out of a new human emerging out of the knowledge of two bodies and the knowledge of two minds, so that they are able to grow up in a kind of stereo space of new development with two different anchors for knowledge. But as a result, that also means that the female and the male know that they complement each other, and that is where war will automatically stop, because people realize that the differences that they have are complementarity, by which they can together do more than alone. But they need to trust each other, to trust themselves to be able to do that. So in that learning of complementarity, then also learn that they should have also learned that anger is where their energy is invested in the wrong space because there's no space for it. Fear is when they try to express their energy into an environment where there is no space at all. There's just a void, there's no connection that it can link up to. And so that as a result of that, and evidently Oriental medicine from India, from China and the Far West, they teach people how to relate to their environment and to each other with that kind of sensitivity. That they know that we are all relatives, and they know that Earth is our mother. Earth feeds us all. So how can you aggress and attack Earth if Earth is your mother? So pollution is automatically prevented because you will nurture Earth, who can then amply feed you. And if you know that all humans are your relatives, why would you see conflict with them? Why would you have difficulty with them having a different opinion or a different view or a different perspective, because evidently they have a different standpoint? So once you know that, why could you, how would you be able to aggress other people? You know that they are like you. You know that there is no reason for you to disrespect them by being different, or they will not disrespect you. They will respect you in your uniqueness likewise. So in the meeting of people with different views around the campfire, you will know that they have different views, but probably as the male versus the female, it is because you have different experiences. So that means that if the context, the situation changes, or if you move to that territory where those other came from, their mindset, their understanding will be totally irrelevant. It fits perfectly there. And that's also the essence of healing diseases. There are people who have so-called entities attached to them. They have beliefs, ideas operating them, which are actually destructive for them. And if you look deeper into their memory box, you can see that there are beliefs there which are created at some point in the past for different circumstances, but those beliefs do not realize that these are not those circumstances. Those beliefs are active and operative and actually do things which are destructive for the self or for the environment. And there is this transition from autist to narcissist to psychopath to sociopath, which are different degrees of alienation with different intensities of repercussion on the social environment. But once you understand this, that there are people who are stuck with old beliefs which they have not been able to resolve yet, then it's just a matter of inviting them into the inner world and have them speak of their ideals and their beliefs, and help them understand that that situation which they know in their inner world, very often that's a traumatic experience, is not what is existing here now in the outer world. So that in a way they can build a barrier between that past and this present. And as a result of creating that barrier, they can limit that domain around that, let's call it a diabolical entity, as people used to do it in the past. I prefer to call it a dysfunctional belief, which is essentially the same. But that dysfunctional belief will be confined in that was there and then. Yes, it was real, and yes, it was real there and then, but it's not real now, and it's not realistic now. And actually, when people look back in the there and then with the knowledge that they have since then, they often find that whatever belief they had was based on a decision which they took, which they had to take, which they could not but take at that time because they didn't have the further knowledge. With further knowledge now, they realize they could have taken another decision then. And by taking that other decision, they can get rid of that belief. And so you limit the devil in his box, and then you talk with the devil and help the devil understand that he's actually an angel gotten out of the space where it normally would work well. Because very often you find that those beliefs which are destructive for the individual or for society are very relevant in a different setting. And it's just a matter of learning how to do that. So the prevention of war lies in the prevention of the internal war that people have when their angelic being, of being able to do blissful things in their environment, turned into a diabolical being, because some trauma basically bleeds through in the environment where they are now and here. But once you identify that devil, once you speak with that devil, you know that it is simply a being there who got stuck in a wrong decision with the wrong belief, with the wrong reflex pattern as a result, and that then you also understand that this is the pattern by which people have dysfunctional behavior in the environment, which is called hurtful behavior in the natural environment, which is called criminal behavior in the social environment. But then you can see that when people infect each other with those beliefs, that war is simply a criminal behavior which is based on a criminal behavior of an individual. So there is something that people can learn about the relationship that we have with each other, and that we need to be very careful and cautious in accepting the beliefs and the ideas of others. And when you look at the politics which you have nowadays, that governments, the first thing that they try to do is control the radio posts of the enemies, and then they try to control the government and the church and the educational system of the other, because they try to inflict their beliefs upon the other. They do not respect that everybody is entitled to their own life, with their own beliefs and their own learning, because in essence, we are all here individuals trying to come up to an understanding of how it is to be creators in creation. And so coming back to that transition from baby to child to adolescent to adult, in the childhood there is that dependence on others, also the opinions of others. In babyhood there is the dependence and the taking in of the beliefs of others with the mother milk. In childhood you can see that there are different perspectives between the mother and the father, and that there are actually options and choices in there. In adolescence you realize that you actually need to know about options and choices, because you need to learn to make choices amongst different options. And as adult you know that that is the case. So as an adult you are no longer dependent on the opinions or the conditions imposed by others. There are many cultures where this is not taking place, for the simple reason that cliques have taken over governments and churches, and money is also a church, education and the radio system, which is also a form of advertising, for the imposition of ideas which are not yours. But you can only detect that if you can get out of that. And in the biblical sense, that the only way to really get out of that is when you realize that the outer world is something that we create together, inclusive all the conflicts that are portrayed, and most of them are fictitious, because most of them are about dogmatic illusions, either religious, and money is a religion, and that you can get out of that if you go to the internal world, where you can speak with your internal devils and re-educate them, learn from them, and see in which conditions they work and which conditions they don't work, so that within you, you can resolve that war which arose out of behavior which was conditioned within you by others or by you, which is no longer functional. So in general you can say that the wars that occur between cultures are simply beliefs that exist between groups of cultures which are simply amplified beliefs which exist within individuals, but that those individuals that are just as individual and unique as you, and certainly they're entitled to their opinion, but that doesn't mean that you need to act on their opinion, because if that opinion is wrong, you will create madness in your mind if it is dysfunctional. You'll create criminality if in society if it is dysfunctional. You'll create disease in your body if it is dysfunctional. Or you'll create ecological catastrophe in the environment if it is dysfunctional. So there are very good reasons to learn to test your ideals, and specifically to know that your actions, your reflex actions, need to be tested by your beliefs, and that your beliefs need to be tested by the decisions which you took whenever, in conditions whichever, so that you can come back to the understanding of freedom of choice. And that is the essence of that lesson of learning to operate the kingdom within. That yes, your world within, the world of your reflexes, the world of your beliefs and convictions, the world of your doubts and decisions, the decision that you take, are based on the freedom of choice that you have within. But that also gives you the freedom of choice to change your decisions, to change your belief, and to change your reflex behavior. And in essence, that is the remedy against war. It's also the remedy against disease. It's also the remedy against madness. It's also the remedy against ecological problems. And one of the things which is relevant now is the understanding that we cannot end wars because people do not understand that the war comes from within themselves. Because if you choose to join the one party or the other party, you just simply chose for the one idea or the opposite idea. But in yourself, you probably didn't test that the one idea is just as right as the opposite idea. Because if two people can have two different and opposite ideas or ideals, that must mean that both of them are right. But it also means that both of them are wrong. And both of them probably assume that their angel is a devil, or they assume that their devil is an angel. And it is that change of perspective which you learn to address and mediate in the healing technique. When you can speak with somebody and realize that there is a demon within them, that there's a devil behavior within them, that's a destructive tendency within them, simply because there is a belief as a residue of something which they experienced in the past somewhere else, but that somewhere else is not here. It doesn't apply here. And once you are able to draw the limit, the difference, the distinction between then there and the now here, you can also educate that devil that it is an angel if it just goes around from the one side of the equation to the other side of the equation. What's negative on the one side of the equation sign is positive on the other side of the equation sign, and war is resolved by that principle. And there's, however, one thing more that needs to be understood to resolve war, which is the relationship between the individual and the group. Because war is a group process. It is an invitation to dance for millions of people, out of which thousands will die, for no good reason than that they listen to somebody who is part of a group who then has decided that it is a nice idea to go and kill your fellow humans, people just like you. So the problem in the war and the creation of war is not in the willingness of people to go out and kill others, because most often these are just poor people with a lack of education or a lack of money, who were given the idea that if you go and kill somebody who's just like yourself, it's a good thing. No, killing is not a good thing, for the simple reason that by the principle of freedom of choice, if you would be allowed to kill somebody else, then that other would be allowed to kill you. That has been summarized by the simple formula: don't kill others, because that's the simple best remedy that you will not be killed by others. If everybody abides by that principle, don't kill others, you will not be killed. It's for your own benefit that you do not kill others. So it's for your own benefit not to pick up a weapon and sign up to go for war. It's simply the notion that when you sign up to join an army, you learn to become a murderer, you become an assassin of people you don't know for reasons that you don't understand, for the simple reason that the political leaders of your country formulated a thought or formulated an expression, formulated an ideal or ideology which most often is not true. History has shown that most of the wars were created by intent with a false argument. The Bay of Tonkin affair was never there. So wars are created by politicians for different reasons. Once you understand that, then of course you can see that the cause of war is that those politicians decide for war, pretend reasons are given for that, but that there is something at the level of the politician which is wrong, that they are acting on one of those diabolical intents instead of the angelical intent. If they were operating by angelical intent, they would go to that other nation, say, you have this wonderful mineral that really we want lots of. If you're willing to help us, we are willing to help you. The Chinese are actually taking that approach in a lot of ways, going to nations of which they want to have the resources and offering them help of a different kind. It is something totally different if you go to the nation and just rob them of their resources, because those resources are not actually property of that nation. They're certainly not property of the invading nation. They're a property of Earth. Before grabbing those resources, it is wise to understand what happens if you take that resources, what kind of pollution and planetary destruction might come from it. So before you have war, first you need to have wisdom. And of course, once you have wisdom, you can go to that other nation and say, well, you have this wonderful material. Would you be willing to share that with us? We would like to turn it into this and that and the other. And then we can share that what we created out of that with you. So that angelic form of living together, based on realizing that we're all family together, can only occur if the politicians are actually representatives, not misrepresentatives, that they're not diabolical, but they're angelical. And that is where a crux of the problem of war has to be resolved, that war can exist at the moment because there is a disbalance in the way that government functions. It is by misrepresentation instead of self-representation. So you cannot avoid war because there will be a discrepancy in perspective and a discrepancy in understanding. And if people are not able to resolve their internal conflicts, the wars, the angers and the fears, then they cannot resolve conflicts between them. So the dissolution of war starts with people learning how to resolve their internal emotional conflicts within themselves, and as a result also realize that in groups they can work without the internal emotional conflicts, that in fact the emotional conflicts are an enrichment of the mutual understanding, because then there is a complementarity of the views and perspectives by which together they can know more than alone. But that also, that only works if groups do not operate as an individual, but that groups actually literally operate as groups, which means that individuals have relationships with other people, and that in that relationship they are equally in balance, and by the relationship of relationships between people, groups form. But that means that in those groups nobody speaks on behalf of the group. People can only speak on behalf of themselves. And then when all people have spoken out what they want to say, then everybody knows that, and within the group a common understanding will emerge by which they are able to share a common conduct. And it's not by telling each other what to do, but by telling what they wish to do and telling them what they cannot do. If everybody says what they can do and like to do, but also announce what they cannot do or do not like to do, then they will find people who like to do what they do not like to do, or can do what they cannot do, because we do complement each other. And cultures are based on that principle. And once you have a group of people who operates in that way, then groups of groups, and humanity is one group of groups, can also operate in that way. That different nations can come together and say, this is what I like to do, this is what I do not like to do. This is what I do well, this is what I cannot do. They complement each other and thereby build that same connectedness between them as you can have between groups, as you find between friends, because friends often tell each other what they like to do, what they don't like to do, what they're good at, what they're not good at, because there's no guilt, no shame in their relationship. As soon as there is a denial involved, then that internal denial will create external denials, will amplify those external denials, and war comes out of that. So I wanted to talk about war, because in my reality, war is a fiction. It is created as a result of people not being able to, within themselves, address where they have problems, what they like to do, what they don't like to do, what they can do, what they cannot do. Once they realize that within themselves, and when they can calibrate the discrepancy between samsara and maya, their world image and their self image, which is actually the front brain and the rear brain, if that is not calibrated, then in their pineal gland, which is the seat of freedom of choice in a sense, they cannot make the right decisions. They will make the wrong decisions. And then they need to learn to get rid of that discrepancy by realizing that the devil within them is actually the angel which got on the wrong side of the equation sign. They need to be able to operate the equation sign. They need to be able to understand that their self-identification with themselves or the environment is their equation sign. That is the equator where they put themselves in the equation of creation. And in order to be able to learn the art of being a creator in creation, and in order to practice participation in creation, we need to practice that equation sign in the pineal gland, just as we need to learn to pee and poo and walk and bicycle, have relationships, have sex, know what we can think and how we can unthink our thoughts, how we can make our body sick, how we can heal our body. There's a lot that we can learn from our body. There's a lot that we can learn in our body. But only when that learning is present is there a possibility to learn from our mistakes. And learning from mistakes is a starting point for becoming consciousness, being able to create good relationship, have mental sanity, have physical wellness, create good relationship, good society, good humanity. And it all starts with that learning to understand about a choice which works and a choice which doesn't work. Choices are never right or wrong, because things are never true or false, because whatever is true in one environment could be false in another. Whatever is right in one side of the equation would be left on the other side of the equation. It is only when we realize that opposites are complements that we can understand how we can connect them, by the simple principle that a boundary is a separator but also a connector. And that is how I was able to start to understand war and the curing of criminality, that as a boundary is a separator and a connector, then it just depends on our identification with that boundary if we perceive it as separating and connecting. And it is by our choice that we turn it into the one or the other. So that at the moment that we have a problema, a problema which is in front of your door sill, then you can also understand that that is also obvious, obvious, that is what is in front of you on the road. So whether you look at it as a problem in front of you in the passage of the doorway, or as obvious in the passage on the pathway, it's just a matter of how you take the next step. And the taking of the next step, that is the essence of being able to create a decision, but also by being able to recreate the decision. And once you understand that, you can resolve the internal conflict, you can resolve conflicts in relationships, you can have groups in which everybody can represent themselves. You no longer have representation, thus misrepresentation by others, and you no longer have the accumulation of error into group structures, into humanity. So the elimination of war is the simple process of the curing of criminality, which is the simple process of healing of disease, which comes out of understanding how the mental process in the body started to interfere with the functional process of the body. And so that was what came together in my mind in starting to explore this notion of war. First, I needed to realize that war is very prevalent in humanity at the moment. Then I needed to come to understand that even though it's so prevalent that it's considered to be normal, actually it is not normal. It's quite mad. And if you look at the effects of war, the killing of the people, the enormous amount of lands and culture that is being destroyed, it is insane that people would still create war. It is unimaginable that people would not have made a first law for all nations: there will be no war. We will not destroy each other. We will not kill each other. We will not steal from each other. We will help each other. We will work together with each other. We will see how we can complement each other and thereby can do more. So once you have that understanding, war disappears from the equation. So I needed to go into that mindset that I could regard war as not normal, not natural, and that I could come to understand that war is a disease, but in fact that war is just a standard, typical, normal, any kind of disease. That yes, war is a crime, thus it is a mental disease, but mental disease and crime operate by the same principle as physical disease, because they're always physiological disease. And in our physiological system, we can see how mind and body are actually two sides of the same. So if we can heal the physical, we can heal the mental and the other way around. That's the psychosomatic principle. And that means, yes, we can get rid of war, because we can get rid of disease, because we can get rid of crime, because we understand that in the psychosomatic principle, it is all about how we are able to use freedom of choice in the physical setting of our body and the world. And then, of course, I was helped by that understanding that in the four-dimensional logic, every boundary is a separator and a connector. And once you understand that, then you realize that if you look for separation, it's a choice. If you look for connection, it's a choice. But you do that connection in the same place. It is the same boundary which you turn into a separator and thereby turn it into the walls of hell, or you turn it the other way around and it is a connector and it is the gates of paradise. And so that insight of the relationship between the walls of hell are the gates of paradise, you just need to turn them at right angles, I had a long time ago. And then later on I realized how within us we need to do that right angle by going right angular within ourselves, how we do need to do the complement of what we are doing. which is basically the exercise of, can you have two opposite thoughts in your mind at the same time? And a different kind of thought which is similar to that, can you have no thought in your mind at the same time? And that's why it brings you to the core of meditation, because when you sit down and you look at your thoughts, you can see that there are lots of thoughts, and you can jump on a thought, like going on a surfboard which is on a wave, and you can just drive it to the shore until the wave crashes. Or you can not jump on the waveboard and see all these thoughts come by like waves coming by while you're sitting on a pier. So you have the choice to go into the involvement or the uninvolvement, into the observer system of Euler, or into the participatory system of Lagrange, as it's called in mathematics and physics. You always have that choice. And by operating that choice, you can then come to realize that making that choice is the same as sitting in meditation and choosing to follow a thought or not. And evidently, if you can follow a thought, you can also follow the opposite thought. You just have to say something simple like, do not think of a red tulip, and automatically you link your thought to a red tulip. We do not operate the word no in our mind, because the mind does not operate negation. The thought and the opposite thought, look for it, try it, find out, and you will discover that you cannot hold the thought and the opposite thought at the same time. You will discover that they in a way explode and implode, and that a different realization comes in their place, because the opposites connect, and in the connection of the opposite there is always a deeper layer which is not that of the separation of the opposite, but about the integration of the opposites. And that was this power of the four-dimensional logic of the yes, no, the maybe, and the don't know. The maybe is right between the yes and no, where the opposites connect, and that's where you can actually navigate to a different position in the opposite. So if people say, if you're not for us, you're against us, that's nonsense. You can't be in the middle space where both ideas are right and both ideas are wrong, because if both ideas were right, there wouldn't be a conflict. And so as you then realize both ideas must be wrong, that means that there are examples of a different idea which you haven't seen as yet. And then you come to that level where you're not on the one side or the other side or in between, but you realize that the yes and the no occupy the same space which you haven't seen yet, and which you can only discover if you go beyond the yes and the no. And that space is where the words disappear. That's why meditation is always connected to the peaceful people, because they learned that if they chase an idea or another idea, it just doesn't matter, because chasing idea is just discovering that there are lots of ideas. But if there are lots of ideas, there must be many more ideas. But if there are many more ideas, then the ideas that you know could be perhaps not the best ideas for the situation which you're in. So in the situation you're in, you can then look for the idea that you don't know as yet, which might be better for the situation that you're in. And once you realize that, you'll have a government of people who know to meditate. When there is a problem, they meditate. And out of that, there will always be solutions. There will never be conflicts. It all comes back to the same principle. The group process is always based on process individual. Conflicts between groups are always conflicts within the individual. Conflicts within the individual are always conflicts within the mind. Conflicts within the mind you can resolve by going to the core and looking at the conflict, looking at the opposite ideas, seeing if you can hold the two opposite ideas in your mind at the same time, and you will find you will come up with a new idea, one which does resolve the issue at hand. So then there's no use for war. You can easily cure war by treating it as a mental disease. If necessary, lock up all of the people involved in a war, take them for a holiday, teach them to meditate, and they'll come out realizing that they're glad that they didn't kill somebody else, because in fact we are all cells in the body of humanity, so they are killing part of themselves. Not a good idea. So instead of killing themselves, they can heal themselves, which they can start to do by meditating. And once they meditate, they can see that thoughts connect, people connect, realities connect, and we have this immense platform for practicing how to be the best ideal creators in creation.